Okay, Perek Chafalef Pasik Beis. Last time we were discussing at great length all about the various laws of court and Bezdin and so on and so forth. But now we'll get more back into the text. The Pasik starts off the first mitzvah after Matan Torah, and it says, Ki sikna evet ivri, if you will buy a Jewish slave. And Rashi explains that evet ivri means a slave who is Jewish, not a slave owned by a Jew. Because there are many different laws in the laws of slavery. Now, every person is going to come along and say, slavery, how can the Torah allow such a thing as slavery? But the truth is, the way the Torah describes and rules in the laws of slavery, it's basically a worker. It's not the concept of slavery. Now there's two types, just to give an introduction to this law of Eved Ivri, of a Jewish slave. There's only two reasons how a Jew could become a slave. There's only two possibilities. One the Pasuk is speaking about over here, and one is later on a Chumash, in Vayikra. Here Rashi explains, the Pasuk is speaking about a Jew who stole something. He doesn't have money to pay it back. So the courts say, hey, pay it back, you stole it. He says, I have no money. So the court would sell him as a slave for 6 years. He was only maximum allowed to, well, meanwhile, you can only sell him for 6 years. During the duration of the 6 years, the guy has the ability to buy himself out, even against the will of the master. That means, let's say, to make it simpler, you buy a slave $600 for 6 years. So it's $100 a year. If after 2 years, the slave coughs up $400, comes to the master, says, here, sir, here's $400, I'm buying myself out free, he goes out free. What?
How could he acquire money if anything falls automatically becomes his master?
No, that is only by a non-Jewish slave.
Oh.
A Jewish slave is not owned by his master. He's basically what we would call a worker that worked for the master for 6 years. There are certain exceptions to the rule. But the rule is that whatever the Eved, whatever the slave acquires, the master acquires, that is speaking by a non-Jewish slave. We're going to get there later. The law of a non-Jewish slave is as follows. If I buy, in the time when slavery was allowed according to Torah, if I buy a non-Jewish slave, a male non-Jewish slave, I buy him, I own him, I have to take him, give him a bris, and he has to go to the mikveh. He becomes obligated in all the mitzvahs that women are obligated in, meaning all negative commandments, any positive mitzvah not connected to time. And that's why, when you find always in the Mishnah, Nashim v'avadim, women and slaves, everybody screams, hey, you're comparing women to the slaves, you know. The Torah is speaking about the halachic aspect. You're talking about a non-Jewish slave that was bought by a Jewish owner. He gives him a bris. He takes him to the mikveh. He becomes obligated in all the mitzvahs women are obligated in. He works forever. Certain conditions, you knock out a tooth, you knock out an eye, you knock out a whatever it is, the guy goes out free. And when he goes out free, he becomes a full-fledged Jew. He has to go to the mikveh again. He becomes a full-fledged Jew. We mentioned the story many times, the importance of davening with a minyan. Rabbi Lazar, the Gemara says, Rabbi Lazar, the famous Rabbi Lazar, walked into shul once with his slave, and there were 9 Jews to the minyan, and they needed a minyan. He freed his slave to make him a full-fledged Jew to be able to daven with a minyan. That's how important to these people davening with a minyan. Today, you get up 5 minutes late not to daven with a minyan. But, daven with a minyan, you know, Shmonesri with a minyan, yeah. Daven with a minyan was, and in fact, Tesis asks the question, you're really not supposed to free a slave. The Torah says, La'elam bahem ta'aveda, they should work for you forever. Tesis answers, davening with a minyan is so important, you can even free a slave to be able to daven with a minyan, like Rabbi Lazar did. But that is a goyish slave. So over there you own him. So when he gets something, he finds something, it's yours. But Eved Ivri is not like that. What?
Is it more important than saying Kurbanos?
Yeah. Even though he looks at me like I'm crazy, but yeah, that's the halacha. I'm not saying what he had, but the bottom line was he freed a slave, even though the Torah says you really shouldn't. Here we're talking about a different story. Here the Torah is speaking about you acquire from the court a Jewish slave. How is he becoming a Jewish slave? Like Rashi says, speaking machru, Bezdin sold him because he was too poor to pay back what he stole. The second scenario that we're not speaking about here, even though the same law applies, is if a guy was so broke, if a Jew became so poor, he had no money to buy anything, so then Bezdin said, if you want, you're allowed to sell yourself as a slave. Then somebody else has an obligation to take care of you, and so on and so forth. So the Torah says like this, Ki sikna eved ivri, when you'll buy a Jewish slave, Sheish shanim ya'aved, he should work for you for 6 years, uvashviyis, and in the 7th year, yeitze lachof shichinam, he goes out free, completely free. Now the law of an eved ivri, the Gemara uses an interesting expression, whoever buys a slave buys a master for himself. Because the din is you have to feed the Eved, you have to give him to sleep. If there's a question of you or the Eved, the food, what you have to give the Eved first. You have to take care of the servant better than you take care of yourself even.
How did he become a Jew?
You're a Jew.
But no, I mean you freed a non-Jewish slave.
This is not speaking about that guy.
I understand, but I was backing up a little bit. How did he become a Jew? You just freed him. So, I mean...
It was a conversion process. It was a conversion process that was really forced upon him by the fact that you bought him as a slave. But by the way, I should have said this before. The Rambam writes in the Gemara, in the laws of Avodim, the Rambam says, what happens if you buy a goyish slave? And he says, you know what? I ain't becoming a Jew. I ain't circumcising myself. I'm not interested in it. So the Rambam says in the Gemara, you work on him for a year to convince him. If by an end of a year he refuses, you have to let him go free. Or, I believe the halacha is you can sell him to a guy. But you can't keep such an Eved in your house if he refuses to become a Jew. So, you know.
He has the freedom to say no.
He has the ability to say no, but most of the time they did because they were treated very nicely. You know, you have to understand. These people that were sold as slaves, yeah? Most people, if you read in the history books, when people practice slavery, right? They treated the slaves cruel. I mean, it was a whole fight in America, the Civil War. They were very cruel to the slaves. If the slave knew he was bought by a Jew, that the Torah says you have to treat him dignity and respect, you know, so they would rather be the slave of a Jew, rather than the slave of a non-Jew, where he's going to be treated cruelly, where there's no laws governing. There weren't laws governing how to treat a slave. Torah has laws how to treat a slave. So it says as follows. He works for 6 years. Even if Shemitah comes in the middle, the sabbatical comes in the middle, he still stays as a slave. The only time he would go out free, he takes seat. The only time he would go free is if Yovel, the Jubilee, comes. The 50th year comes in the middle, then he would go out. Okay. Now, the din is, like we said, you're not allowed to call him slave. You have to treat him nicer than you would. You have to give him to eat and drink from the best and so on and so forth. Okay. Now, this is only when you bought a slave for 6 years. If a person rents himself out as a worker to the boss, all these laws don't apply, obviously. Okay? Now, what does it mean? He goes out free. V'yotza v'shiz yetzel achav shechinam. he goes out free completely. So the Gemara says, what happens if the slave, at the end of the 6 years, he's going out free, but he was sick for like 2 years. And the master had to pay money to heal him. So at the end of the 6 years, the master would come along to the slave and say, hey, you know, I spent $1,000 on your medical bills. Now that you're not a slave anymore, pay me up the money that I spent on you. Torah says, no, chinam. He goes out free. Any money you spent on him, the Eved does not have to pay back after the, when he goes out, even if he was sick for a long time. But what happens if the slave was sick for 4 years? Because more than half, not three, it's more than half, then he has to make it up. Then he has to make up the time or the money.
The whole amount?
Yeah. No, the amount for that 4 years. But what happens if the Eved was functionable, but not as functional as he was before the illness, then he doesn't have to pay a cent. He doesn't have to make it up, because the bottom line is he was still working in a capacity as a slave.
What's the difference between worker and slave?
We'll soon see, basically, based on the next pasuk. Okay. We're going to learn the next pasuk. The next pasuk is a lot to discuss about. In Begapa Yove, Begapa Yetze. The Torah says, if this slave arrives himself, I'll explain it, he leaves himself. In Baal Ishahu, if he's a husband of a wife, for Yatze Ishta Ima, his wife goes out with him. The Torah simply says an interesting halacha. And there's a reason for it, by the way, even though it doesn't sound logical, it sounds, if anything, the opposite. The Torah says like this. If the Eved, when he was bought as a slave, was married, the Torah says his master can give him a non-Jewish woman as a wife to produce non-Jewish slaves that would eventually stay by the master. But no, the woman's not Jewish.
The slave is Jewish.
The Jewish slave is given a shiksa by the master to produce non-Jewish slave children. But that's only if he was married to a Jewish woman, then he can give him a shiksa. But if the guy was not married, then you can't give him a shiksa. And that's what the Torah says. In Begapa Yovei.
While he's married?
Yeah.
But the Jewish
one woman second.
Would not make noise.
I know. I knew this was going to wake everybody up. Ma?
There's something the Persians do in the olden days also. They would.
Okay, but yeah, I know. But this is the only time. This is the only time a Jewish man, the Torah permits to marry a shiksa. Okay? Now, what? Relax. One second. Let's discuss the din. Now, the Torah says, let's first take the pasuk, simple meaning of the pasuk before we get into the details. The Torah says, if he goes in alone, he goes out alone. If he is married, then his wife goes out with him. Now the question is, what do you mean his wife goes out? Since when was she ever a slave? Right? He bought Reuven as a slave. He didn't marry Yaakov's wife is Sarah. He bought Yaakov as a slave. How did Sarah get a slave? He didn't buy Sarah as a slave. Yaakov was bought as a slave. So why does the Torah say, in Begapa Yov, if he goes in alone, meaning he's single when he goes in, he goes out single. If he's married, his wife goes out with him. What is that supposed to mean? Well, how did she become a slave? So what the Pasuk is saying, Rashi explains from the Gemara, what the Pasuk is saying is very simple halacha. And this will explain the whole concept of the halacha. The Torah says, if you buy a slave who's married, who's going to support that wife? He's not getting paid to work. You bought him. He's working for you for free. So the Torah says, who's going to support that wife? So the Torah says, you know who supports the wife? The master has an obligation to support his wife. Mm-hmm. When he goes out free after 6 years, so then the wife goes out with him. What do you mean she goes out? The master doesn't have to support her anymore because now the husband could go and work. That's what the pasuk is saying. Begapa Yove, if he go in single, he has to go out single. Meaning, he can't give him a shiksa. He has to go out single. If he's married, Then the wife goes out with him. What do you mean his wife goes out with him? Like this, the master had an obligation to support the wife. And now that the 6 years are up, the obligation is over. But the question is, so why can he give her a shiksa? As the pasuk is going to say, it's very simple. Who in the world is going to buy a slave if the owner has to support the whole family? I want to buy a slave. I have to support. A guy has 12 kids. I'm going to support 12 kids and a wife. I mean, well, who should want to support a wife? Who would want to buy a slave that's married if you have to support the wife? So Torah says, you know why? And what does the Torah want? The Torah wants you to buy him as a slave. The guy is broke. He has no money. He needs parnasa. He needs to live. The Torah says, give him money. Buy him as a slave. You're doing him a favor. That he'll have what to eat and drink and he'll be able to live. But who's going to want to buy a slave that's married? You have to support the wife also. So the Torah said, we're going to give you a fringe benefit. If you buy a guy who's married, because you have an obligation to support the family, the Torah says, I'm going to pay you back. How am I going to pay you back? You can marry a shiksa and have kids. You can give the servant, the slave, a shiksa. Let her produce kids from him. And the kids you're going to be able to keep. So the master will say, this is worth it.
The kids you keep forever. The kids.
Yeah, the kids are goyish slaves.
The slave has having all the fun.
What a curiosity. How many,
watch your wife here. Watch
how
it.
Many times can you do that? How many times the master can do that? How many chicks?
One wife. One chicks.
So he's got a regular wife and he's got this chicks.
Right.
And then when he goes out with his other wife and the other one stays there.
The chicks stays.
Yeah. And his wife doesn't mind this business?
Well, the truth is, in the olden times, don't forget, they had many wives. The only problem is this one's not Jewish, but the Torah says you could. I mean, the Torah gives the permissive. And what did they... Listen, in the time of Antor Rabbeinu Gershom, when men were allowed to have two wives, it's far even later. Not nowadays, guys. Don't even think about it. Yeah. But even after Rabbeinu Gershom, when the Sephardic Jews were allowed to have many wives, so the truth is, the wives were competing. The wives were competing. But not only that. A guy had two wives. The wives wanted the husband's attention. Right? Well, that's one of the reasons. But it says that that's why in the Gemara, in the Mishnah, in Yevamis, when the guy had two wives, each one was called a tzara to each other. It was a problem for the next because they were very competitive. But the fact that in the olden days this was the style, so people were used to it. And they knew it.
Rabbi, the wartime shiksa was another example or not?
Over there she converted first.
Oh, she converted.
Here she didn't convert.
If she was released, would she become Jewish? Elected and then...
No, she... No.
What does if he's half? Or if he's... is he a half Jew? Or he's a full Jew?
Who? No, he was speaking about an Eved that's completely Jewish. And the kids he produces from the non-Jewish woman are goyim. I mean, this is gracious.
He
place.
Needs
what?
He needs the Eved in order to accomplish this.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he could do it himself.
Right. He can't make shiks himself.
He can't help slaves.
Is it not? Okay.
What about a coin?
He couldn't do it, no. But he could be a slave to his wife. No, I mean. He's allowed to be a slave. Okay. Huh? You're not a kohen, it didn't matter. He asked me if a kohen can be a slave with this condition. I say a kohen can't have a shiksa, but he could be a slave to his wife anyway. Okay, so the Torah says in Begapa Yove, Begapa Yetze, meaning if he's single when he goes in to be a slave, his master cannot give him a non-Jewish woman. In Bali Shohu, if he's a man with a wife, so then he's able to Yotze Ishta Ima, his wife goes out with him, meaning that he doesn't have to support the wife anymore. Now, the interesting question is what would be if the wife though works and makes money? Who would get that money? In other words, what happens if a man buys an Eved? Okay, so he has to support the guy's wife too, the Jewish one I'm talking about. He has to support her. So what happens if she finds a job and goes to work and brings in money? The Rambam writes, the master will get the money. Why? Because he's supporting her. Now, if she says to him, you know what? Don't support me. And don't take my money. She has a right to do that too. By the way, just for the women in the crowd, a wife could do that to the husband too. There's a din, when you're married, the husband has a halachic obligation of supporting his wife. Therefore, if the wife works, I'm talking Torah law, forget about civil law now for a second. If the wife works or makes money, the money goes to the husband because he supports her. So it's only right that the money that she gets goes to him. The same thing, the Gemara says, what happens if you have a son that you support? Okay, this machleik is what it means. Gedele mektanim, if it's supporting and not supporting, but according to all opinions, if you have an 18-year-old kid that you support, you're supporting the kid, and he walks in the street and he finds a diamond. According to halacha, the father gets the money.
Not the mother?
No, the mother. What does the mother need money for? The mothers don't need money. They only spend it. What do they need it for? They don't have it. They don't spend it. One second. So the din is that when a person is supported by somebody, the Chachamim said, listen, the guy, your parents are supporting you. It's only right that if you get money, you should give it to them. What happens though, the Gemara says, in Halacha, if a wife, let's say, has a very good job, and she's making more money than the husband, and she says to her husband, listen, you know what? Let's make a deal. Don't support me, but what I get is not going to you.
It's a prenuptial
agreement. It's a postnuptial agreement. Yeah. She has a right to say that. She has a right to say it. Why?
Mean old man.
Because the obligation is, the Torah says, listen, olden times women didn't work, they didn't have an income, the husband has an obligation to support her, but it's for her benefit. So if she decides this is better for me, this setup, then she has a right to do it too. But by the Eved, you can't do that. Because the Eved is bought by the master. So for those 6 years. Yeah.
Is there such a thing as a woman Jewish slave?
Yeah, but only until Bas Mitzvah. In other words, the only Jewish slave that exists by women is a father selling his daughter, and she goes out either after 6 years or Bas Mitzvah, whichever one comes first.
Did she get married before she Bas Mitzvah?
Yeah, the master can marry her or give her to his son.
So you go in alone, you come out alone.
This is the male part.
Right, so if a male goes in alone, he's Jewish and he wants to marry a Jewish...
If the master doesn't want, she can't marry him.
And if he allows it?
Huh?
Well, if he allows it, then...
She.
If the master allows the marriage.
Well, then the father probably has to okay it.
They all okay it. Now they're married. They both came in alone, but now what happens when they go out?
It's only when he goes in if he's single.
He goes in single.
Right, this whole din.
No.
If he goes in single, he goes out single. He can't give him a shiksa.
I'm not talking about a shiksa. Jewish slave goes in single.
I understand, no? And he gets married.
Jewish female slave in there and they get married.
No, so after the 6 years they go out happily ever married.
What if they have a child?
Well, it doesn't work that way because it can't be a Jewish slave, a woman Jewish slave.
Under Bas Mitzvah you could.
Well, you're going to marry a 6-year-old.
Sure. You could. They did in the olden times.
So grandmother's 9 years old.
Yeah, in those days.
Mother got married when she was 13, so why not? So then they go out together. So it takes off and goes in along the
way. Okay, now there's a Hasidic interpretation of this pasuk, and it's a Pela Shavart, but It speaks about begapa yove begapa yetze im bal isha hu v'yotze ishte imei. The Pelech Shechsidim say this refers to a chosid going into his Rebbe for a visit, you know, for a yechidus. And he says like this, in begapa yove, if you go into your Rebbe with your goof, with your body, begapa yetze, you're going to go out with your body. Nothing's going to change you. In bal ishahu, if you're a man with a ish, with a fire, v'yotza ishtoi imay, you're going to take the Rebbe's fire out with you. Meaning, begapa yove, you go with your goof. Begapa yetze, you're going to go out with a goof. You know, you don't prepare, you're going like a nothing, you're going to come out like a nothing. In bal ishahu, if you're a man with a ish, fire, v'yotza ishtoi imay, you're going to take the Rebbe's fire with you out. So this is a pasuk. Okay. So this is basically this whole concept of the Evid so far. Then the Tater says, in the next pasuk, in Madein of Yitin Le'isha, if his master gives him a wife, okay, meaning, and like we said before, that the master owns a shiksa, shivcha kananis. He owns this non-Jewish woman, because otherwise he couldn't control her anyway. So he owns her, and he says to the Eved, to the Jewish Eved, okay, take this Isha, and this Eved, this Jewish slave who married now the Shiksa, gives birth to sons and daughters. Ha'isha v'iladeha, the woman and the children, tiyeladineha, go to the master, v'yeti begafe, and he goes out free. He goes out alone. Meaning, after the 6 years, when the Eved, the slave, finishes the 6 years, then he goes out alone. Okay, so now, no, well, the wife, the pasuk said already before that he went out. Oh, by the way, I have to take back what I said before. He says over here, Afa bishuhu kohen. Even if he's a kohen, he's allowed to marry the Sifsha Isha Kanainis.
He can have
an
Eved
Kohen? Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, why can't a Kohen be an Eved? If he steals and doesn't have money, he's an Eved.
He's a Kohen.
The question is different.
No. You want to know if a Kohen can have a Shiksa, she wants to know if a Kohen can be sold. That's the difference. She wants to sell you. The answer is yes to both. If a kohen stole and doesn't have money to pay, he has to because sold as a slave.
Why did he become slave?
Yeah, in this case. But here is different, Tarsus.
After Mashiach comes, he's all right. It's going to apply again? After Mashiach comes.
Probably. When he gets rid of her, yeah. Not only that, it's not also for him to do it, so it's not a sin. When the Torah says he can't marry, right?
Right,
a money, yeah, grushanat. But a kohen only becomes forbidden. It's an interesting halacha. A kohen only becomes forbidden to work as a kohen, which let's say today to duchen or things like that, only if he does a sin which is designated only for a kohen. That means, if a kohen marries a divorcee, a Jew could marry a divorcee. A kohen can't, so he cannot duchen.
What about...
One second. But technically, if a kohen marries a shiksa, he could duchen. Why? Because marrying a shiksa is forbidden for everybody. It's not something unique for a kohen. It's what's called ish asur hamyuched desloy. For instance, a kohen who goes to cemeteries and touches dead bodies and all that, he cannot do Birchat Kohanim. Because he's defiling the mitzvah, he's transgressing a mitzvah which applies uniquely to a Kohen. But if he does a sin that applies to everybody, like he eats chazer, right? There's nothing to do with Birchas Kohanim.
No, there's no exception to the rule of a Kohen marrying a woman who's been married before. There's no exception. Even if his wife dies.
No, a Kohen can marry a widow.
But then the children?
Kosher. Only a Kohen Gadol cannot marry a widow. A regular, normal Kohen can marry a widow. He's not allowed to marry a divorcee. He's not allowed to marry a woman who lived with somebody that she would not be allowed to marry. For instance, if a woman, if a Jewish woman was living with a Jewish boy, okay, and then they split up.
They never got married.
Right. You just, boy, girl, Jewish boy, Jewish girl, yeah, living together. They break up. A Kohen can marry that girl.
Even if she's not a virgin?
Correct. A Kohen Gadol can only marry a virgin. One second. A regular Kohen is not allowed to marry a woman who is with somebody she would not be allowed to marry. For instance, if a woman was with a guy, then she becomes what's called Zaina, but the Torah says, Isha Zona v'chalalo lo yikachu. So in modern day Hebrew, Zona means a prostitute. But in Halacha, Zona means, in this reference, Shenivala la'asuralo. If a woman had relations with somebody, for instance, incest, if a woman had incest with a relative that she would not be allowed to marry, brother,
cousin
you can marry, an uncle you can marry. Okay? If a woman had relations with her uncle, because technically, no, an uncle can marry a niece, so that woman can marry a Kohen. If a woman had relations with a guy, or a brother, or sister, you know, so then, that would be incest. And then that woman would not be allowed to marry a Kohen.
But if there were no witnesses and she didn't admit to doing it.
Well, if you don't know until afterwards, it's a different story. But let's not get into that now. So the Zaina in Torah is not a Kohen, is allowed to marry a woman who's not virgin. He just can't marry a woman who's divorced. And then the Chachamim added another thing. That a woman whose father is not Jewish, a girl whose mother is Jewish and the father's not. Okay, so halachically she's a full-fledged Jew.
Yeah.
Full-fledged Jew.
Right, but her father.
But her father's a guy. So it says in halacha, lechatchila, a Kohen cannot marry a girl whose father is not Jewish. But what happens, nobody knew or whatever, and they got married? They don't have to divorce. They stay married. If a Kohen marries a divorcee, they have an halachic obligation every second to divorce.
Now that case, lechatchila, because you wouldn't do that, would their children be Kohenim? Because
their mother being
Jewish?
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah. But lechatchila, it says it's a begam, you should marry. But in Nisus, late eight, the Gemara says. What?
What about the mother not Jewish and the father Jewish?
Then the woman's not Jewish.
Not Jewish.
A Kohen cannot marry a Giyaris. A Kohen cannot marry a woman who converted. But the daughter of a convert, if it's a halachic conversion, then the Kohen can marry. She's a full-fledged Jew.
She was born after.
It's a full-fledged Jew, but the fact that she was not Jewish before, that give, it's part of the Zaina category, by the way. So the Torah says he can't marry her. But
how can he lose his kahuna too?
A Kohen can never lose his kahuna.
Because I know some Kohen.
Yeah, I know a lot of rabbis that want to make money doing funerals because it's big business, and the rabbis are Kohen. So what do? They say, I'm not a Kohen anymore. Pop, 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 pop. Hocus pocus, magic, I'm not a Kohen anymore. But that's ridiculous.
What if he marries 60, he loses his
The children are not Kohanim. He loses, while he's married to her, one second, he cannot perform the duties of a Kohen. But he still can't go to cemeteries.
Really?
A Kohen who marries a woman, he's not allowed to marry.
What about an Aliyah?
One second. A Kohen, guys, I know it's off the topic here, but anyway. A Kohen who marries somebody he's not allowed to marry, i.e. a divorcee. Right? A Kohen cannot marry a divorcee. Okay. He loses his Kohen privileges. He doesn't get an aliyah. He can get Yisrael. He can't get Kohen. He is not allowed to do Birchat Kohanim, Duchening, he can't do. But he's still a Kohen. Meaning, he's not allowed to go to a cemetery because, oh, I'm not a Kohen anymore, I'm going to go to a cemetery. He's still, every time he goes to a cemetery, it's another sin. He loses the unique privileges that a Kohen has. So because he defiled the laws and the uniqueness of a Kohen, he loses the status of privileges. But he's still a Kohen. Yeah, he has to divorce her.
What about his son?
I mean, in that moment. I know it's weird, but there's actually no example.
I know a lot of examples. A Kohen. Okay, one second. Let's get the story straight, ladies and gentlemen. Even though I got nothing to do with this, I knew you Kohen are making such problems today. With a real Kohen, please stand up. Oh,
she's the highest bidder.
We're two guys with the name Cohen here.
Yitzchak Cohen, right here.
Oh, okay, I didn't know. Okay, now, what happens if a Cohen was married to a regular, kosher, wonderful Jewish woman? Okay, they have kids. Those kids are Cohenim. Okay? Now, what happens if a Cohen had a midlife crisis and he divorced his wife and married a divorcee? Now, the kid that he had kosher, they're Kohanim. Correct? Now, he, as long as he's married to this woman, cannot function as a Kohen. The children they have from the second marriage, because she's not allowed to marry, he's not allowed to marry her, those children are not Kohanim. They're not mamzeidim. They are full-fledged cholol, meaning a full-fledged Jew who's not a Kohen. If a Kohen marries a divorcee, their child is not a Kohen, even if his last name's Cohen. Even if his last name is Cohen.
All pressure.
Okay? If a guy marries a Grusha divorcee, obviously, if he marries a shiksa, the kids are not Jewish. Forget it. You know what I mean?
When he comes to his senses and then divorces her and marries another Jewish girl. Yeah.
So then, if he does tshuva publicly in Das Bezdin, then he could become back a Kohen again. Tshuva helps. But while he's married, and by the way, there's a halachic obligation to have to divorce. So therefore, you have cases, by the way, in today's world, which is, as we all know, a very messed up type of a world. There are cases in today's world. People are not religious. I know cases like this. People are not religious. And they become Bali Tshuva. Mamish religious people. And the guy ends up to be a Kohen. And his wife is a divorcee.
It's crazy, huh?
So according to Allah, they have to divorce. Unless you prove somehow that he's not a Kohen. But you can't have, you know, you try to show that maybe his grandfather, how do you know he's a Kohen? Maybe he wasn't, maybe he did, you know, well, who knows? But it happens, by the way, in the world, there are cases like this. Sometimes, when they were very committed to Yiddishkeit, they divorced. And sometimes, they became religious with everything else. You know, mamish religious, but this test was too great for them, and they didn't pass the test, and they stay married. Okay? So, obviously, halachically, he's sinning by being married to this divorcee. And therefore, he cannot be a practicing Kohen with the qualities of the unique privileges of a Kohen. But he still can't go to a cemetery. He's still a Kohen.
Is that Rabbanan?
No, Minatayla. What? The kids are not Kohen. The kids that they have are not Kohen. They're Yisraelim.
Do you happen to know personally a Kohen who married a divorcee?
Sure.
Married a convert.
Really?
A convert.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of cases like that too.
Convert
is the same thing.
That's not really marriage.
No, she converted halachically. And he married her.
Always conservative.
That's I'm saying converted halachically. We're not going to what if it was
in this messed up world.
Yeah, but I'm saying if a kohen married a convert, and later they found out he's a kohen, let's say, he didn't even know he was a kohen. He found out, so then halachically either has to divorce her, and the kids. But the kids are not mamzedim. They're not kohenim.
If it's not a halachic conversion.
No, I'm saying if it's a halachic conversion, yeah, the kids are not kohenim. If it's not a halachic conversion, the kids are goyim. No, not a mamzer.
A kohen girl is not a kohen girl anymore.
What?
Was a kohen girl when he
finished? Kohen girl dies when he's finished.
See,
you can't choose not to be a kohen girl.
I thought there was one kohen girl who became a tzduki. That's almost like choosing not to be.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that he. But basically, obviously, if he's sinning, they're going to throw him off. But you know, can God just retire?
He wanted to marry a woman that's an almana.
You can't, no.
Can't leave
this position. No. Okay. So therefore, off the topic. Okay. So therefore, we learn like this: if the husband. If the Eved is married, then the master can give him a non-Jewish wife to produce kids. And we explained the reason for that is basically because you want to make it up because he has to support the wife and the kids and the family and so on and so forth. If not, he can't. So it says, what happens when the master does give him a shikshib because he's married and she produces kids? The woman and the kids stay with the master and he goes out free. Now, what happens in Amar Yemer HaEved? What happens if the Eved comes along and says, after the 6 years, the Torah says, okay, get lost, you know, you're out, free. He says, I want to stay, I like it here. Well, after Sadeini, I like my master, as Ishti, as Bonai, I like my shiks over here, and I like my kids, Le'ete Chavshi, I don't want to go out. I don't want to go out, now. The fact that it says in the pasuk im Omar Yemer HaEved, double expression, so the Gemara learns out, he has to say it twice. Okay, he has to say, I want twice. Omar Yemer means a double expression, he has to say it two times. What?
The Eved has to say it twice?
Yeah.
It's a Jewish Eved, no?
Yes, we don't talk about Jews.
Yeah, we're talking about the Jewish Eved. Okay, so what do you do? V'gishi adeinu velo alakim. So the master brings him to Beis Din. Over here, alakim is called Beis Din. Before the Dayanim. V'gishi el adeles, and they bring him over to the door. Oyel ha-mezuzah, or to the mezuzah, to the doorpost. V'rotza adeinu vezozne b'marzeya. And he has to drill a hole in the ear. And then he can work until Yovel, until the Jubilee year. After the Jubilee, we'll go into the details here in a minute. After the Jubilee year, regardless of when it is, a year later, 50 years later, I mean 49 years later, 30 years later, the Eved can stay in Eved until the year of Yovel, and that's it. After Yovel, it's not now. Rashi explains, why do you have to bring him to Beis Din? Why do you have to bring the guy to Beis Din? So Rashi explains, very simply, who sold him? Beis Din sold him. So if they're in the decision of selling him, so they have to be in the decision of extending it. Now, obviously, the Gemara says, and the halacha is, Beis Din tries to convince the Eved not to stay as an Eved. In other words, he has to, the Beis Din has to try to convince them to go out. Now, the Ramban explains, why is Beis Din called Elohim? And by the way, throughout the Parsha Mishpatim, many, many times, Beis Din is called Elohim. Now, Elohim basically is God. Why is a court called Elohim? So the Ramban explains very simply, they're the ones that carry out God's mission on earth. Mm-hmm. In other words, who makes the godly rulings on earth? Beis Din. So Beis Din is called God's representative on earth. So that's why the Ramban explains, they, because God's law is the ones that are setting up, like Ebenezer writes, and like Ebenezer writes that. The Ramban writes, because it says when judges judge in a court, they have to sit with awe and fear because God is present. Because so Elohim, what? Can you?
Is that why you can't curse a judge?
That's the reason why you can't curse a judge. But it says, "Bekerav Elokim Tishpeit." You know, I mean, the Elokim Nimtza Badas Kel. I mean, the God finds Himself in the Beis Din. There's a very interesting story. You mentioned this in the past with the Neid of Yehuda. The Rebbe told the story a few times. When the Neid of Yehuda, who lived in the time of the Baal Shem Tov, was a very, very great. It was a big misnagid. Say his neshama came down to the world to oppose the Baal Shem Tov. And his granddaughter became a chassid. Don't ask, he stopped his granddaughter and she became a chassid. But the Neid of Yehuda is a very, very great tzaddik. The Alter Rebbe said about the Neid of Yehuda, he learned Torah Lishma on a very high level.
What's his name?
It was Neid of Yehuda, Yecheskel Lando from Prague. He was the chief rabbi of Prague, not today, years ago. The Neid of Yehuda, when he was going to become for an interview, to become a rabbi. So today, how do they pick a rabbi? You go and you make a speech, and if they like the way you dress, and the car you drive, and the tie you wear, that's how they pick rabbis today. In the olden times, in the Shtetlach, when they wanted to pick a rabbi, they put the rabbi in front of a scholar firing squad. They would do is all those scholars of the city, and trust me, there were big scholars in the cities. And the rabbi would sit there, and they would shoot questions at him. In halacha. If they liked his halachic ruling, if he was a scholar, they picked him. They didn't like him, or they felt that they knew better than him, so they didn't pick him. So officially, the rule was that they had to ask him cases that were real cases, not hypothetical cases. They had to ask him real cases that came up. So one time when the Neid of Yehuda was at an interview, they asked him a question, and he made a mistake. And he realized he made a mistake. And he said, "Are you? We got you." So the Neid of Yehuda turned to them, and he said, "This case, it never happened." Which was true. The case never happened. And the people shooting the questions made it up. But he was right. So he said to him, "How did you know it was made up?" He said, "I'll tell you why. Because maybe explained to them, when you ask a halacha question to a rabbi, a lot of times you're talking about eating on Yom Kippur. Is something chametz? Is it not chametz? Can you do something on Shabbos? You're playing around with life and death situations. You're playing around with punishment of capital punishment. So the question is, how can a human being make mistakes? How is it possible that you rely completely on a Rav when a Rav can make a mistake?" So the Neid of Yehuda explained to them, when it's a practical case, when it's a real case, like we just said, God is amongst judges. God, a Rav, has what's called Siyata Dishmaya, help from God, that he should make the right decision. So the Neid of Yehuda said, this wasn't a real case, and therefore I made a mistake. God doesn't have to be with me for my ego. It's only a question, a hypothetical case. If I'm right or not, he said, I'm a human being. I make a mistake, and I'm wrong. Because it's not a halachic issue that God would be helping me make a decision. So I understand that this case never happened. And they took him as a rav. They picked him as a rav. So it says when a judge sits in judgment, they have to sit because God is present, and God is guiding their minds, so to speak, to make a proper decision, a halachic ruling. So that's why the Ramban writes, a Beis Din is called Elokim. The Ben Ezra writes, the reason why Beis Din is called Elokim, because they make the godly rulings on earth, you know, the God's representatives on earth. Okay, so Vavadei Le'elam, he has to work forever, meaning until the time of Yevil. Now, Rashi says as follows. First of all, it has to be an uprighted door that's like a mezuzah. What ear do you pierce? The right ear. And it says, why do you pierce the ears? Why should you pierce the ears? So Rashi says two things. One is, Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai said, the ear that heard on the Har Sinai, don't steal. And the guy stole. That's why he was sold as a slave. So he says, pierce him. To punish, like, hey, where were you when God said what you said? The second opinion is, Rabbi Shimon says, so what about a slave that didn't steal, but he sold himself as a slave, the other type of slave? So he says, because the person at Har Sinai also heard God say, God said, Ki li b'nei Yisrael avadim. The Jews are my slaves. So God says, if they're my slaves, why are you getting yourself a different master? You want to be somebody else's slave if you're my slave? So that person, the ears have to be pierced. And another thing Rashi explains down also, why do you do it at the doorpost? This is the door in the middle of the room. You have to do it at the doorpost. The answer is, because when God passed over in Mitzrayim, the Jewish homes, and killed the firstborn Egyptians, at that time, God said, now that I saved your life, you're my slaves. And now you have the chutzpah to go and get somebody else. Then you have to get your ear pierced.
When he leaves at the end, he doesn't take his wife and children?
No.
So what is he supposed to leave his wife and children?
No, they're non-Jewish. He came late.
They're not Jewish, but it's his wife and children.
No, they're not.
Jewish wife as well.
Well, he doesn't have what, maybe a Jewish wife?
Well, he has to have a Jewish wife.
Yes, yeah,
so You came late.
Yeah. Okay. So what about, he likes the non-Jewish one.
Okay.
No. What's the answer of it?
What do you want?
In fact, they bring down
a person should not work for more than 3 years, because after 3 years they become a category of a slave. Not really a slave, but you know, you become the category of a slave. So basically it says like this. The Mefarshim ask a very simple question. We'll finish with this. Why do you drill his ear? Because the ear that heard, don't steal, and he went and stole. So the question is, you should do it as soon as he sold as a slave. Why do you wait until after the 6 years? If he says, I want to stay longer, that's when you drill, pierce his ear. But if you're doing it right away, if the guy doing it because he stole, then do it right away. So there's a few answers. One answer is, you can't punish him twice. The first punishment is, he's being sold as a slave. That itself is punishment. You want to give him a double punishment? For one crime, you don't give double punishment. But now that the guy says, I want to stay longer, that shows that he enjoyed being a slave. So then it wasn't the punishment, the first punishment. So now the Torah says, then go punish him.
What about the guy who sold himself?
Again, same thing. He heard. But he heard the Kli B'nai Yisrael Avadim. Huh? It's a good question. I don't know.
What? So might as well become a Christian. We always punished. No matter what we do, slave is punished. He doesn't want to be punished.
Was it? Is there a punishment free zone?
Rabbi, where was that abolished
slavery? Time to be some Migdash. By the way, next week, besides the fact that it's labor,